Don't take this wrong, but if you know more quotes from the Art of War author Sun Tzu than you do from Fred Rogers, you're probably a bit of a jagoff. Fear not. Today, Use All the Crayons podcast is going to open your heart, and we're going to fix it. Yesterday, we're putting the podcast spotlight on Latrobe icon Fred Rogers in the hopes it'll remind us all that there are other ways to lead and other ways to live. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is Use All the Crayons podcast, Season 2, Episode 8. Dress like Fred for Halloween. You can change the world. Here's one from Fred. Knowing that we can be loved exactly as we are gives us all the best opportunity for growing into the healthiest of people. The IRS reports in 2023 that 84,000 men and women listed their primary occupation as Elvis impersonator. They performed in clubs, at parties, and fulfilled every role a festive America might need. It's a phenomenon that transcends both borders and genders. Australia, for instance, has a performer that bills herself as the only Down Under Elvis impersonator. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm Sydney welcome to Shelvis. She Elvis. Shelvis. Elvis, of course, is revered for his charisma, his musicianship, his message, and for the legacy of universal kindness it inspires still. Any of that sound vaguely familiar? So there are enough professional Elvis impersonators, or tribute artists, to fill a coliseum. How many ever-loving part-timers must there be? Yet it's impossible to find anyone, anywhere, who will impersonate or pay tribute to Mr. Rogers. I know the mere suggestion must leave you all shook up. How about a Mr. Rogers one-man play starring, say, Bryan Cranston? I suggest Cranston because I remember one stellar Breaking Bad review that declared his Walter White was so evil he made Tony Soprano look like Mr. Rogers. People through the years have lined up on Broadway to see one-man plays about Albert Einstein, Lyndon Johnson, Nelson Mandela, Eleanor Roosevelt, and all manner of famous and infamous. Who wouldn't want to spend 90 minutes in the land of make-believe hearing Fred talk about his life lessons and how they apply to today's tumultuous news events? Just having him read his greatest hits aloud would be eminently fulfilling. It worked for Bruce Springsteen. His Springsteen on Broadway made $2.5 million a week over a 58-week run on the Walter Carr Theater stage. Let's see how that works. A 2.5 million times 58. You didn't come here for math. A Mr. Rogers on Broadway could make more than that. It could make a difference. Patsy and Kathy Janella were one of just three couples married by Fred. Just three. It was 1983. In his lifetime, this man, known for his many values that sanctify any successful marriage, presided over just three marriages. It's a pity he didn't do more. The man had a gift. Ask Patsy's bride, Kathy. Oh, I was a wreck, she says. I was panicking. It all just seemed so crazy. I was in my slip in the bedroom, and I heard this knock on the door, and it was Fred. I said, Fred, I'm scared to death. And he immediately began calming me by saying, Kathy, there's a lot of love out there. I can just feel it. We all want it to happen, and you're going to make it, and it's going to be just fine. You met in the land of make-believe, now let's make this real. His mere presence was so calming, she said. Truly, he was like a modern-day Jesus Christ. Have you ever had a boss you could describe as Christ-like? An uncle? A pastor? And he was indeed their boss. Kathy was a WQED set designer, Patsy, a station stagehand. So Fred wasn't being metaphorical. They did meet on the set of the land of make-believe. The pair were friends first, good friends, for 5 years, before it dawned on them that a couple who worked so well together so joyfully really ought to give a shot to true romantic togetherness. 1 year later, Patsy was pestering her to wed. But she'd been married before and it hadn't worked out. She was leery of going through another big Catholic wedding, so she blurted out she'd marry him, yes, but only if they could get Fred to perform the ceremony. And up the stairs they went. Delighted, he said yes, but he said it had to be done on Saturday, just days away. He'd be shooting a Tonight Show guest spot, and then it was off to Nantucket for the summer. Could they do it? Yes! I remember walking out that office, Kathy said, and seeing Margie Whitmer, the producer. She was always in control and knew everything that was going on. She asked what had just happened in Fred's office. I said, Fred just agreed to marry us on Saturday. Her mouth just flew open. She said, do you know he gets hundreds of requests to perform wedding ceremonies each year and he turns them all down? It was different with Patsy and Kathy. They were like family, and different still in their sweet dispositions. He was always telling Patsy how nice I am. Imagine being called nice by Fred Rogers. It'd be too negative an analogy to say it's a case of the pot calling the kettle black. More like the sugar calling the syrup sweet. Up to that point, it seemed, as preposterous as it sounds in hindsight, that it was just like a friend doing them a favor. It's important to understand how they knew Fred, not as a celebrity, but as a benevolent boss who just happened to be an ordained minister. So they didn't expect any fanfare for a backyard wedding in a crowded ethnic neighborhood on a sweltering July day. Remember, too, no social media. Those quaint notions were detonated when they turned the corner on Augusta Street. Kathy said, "Never, never did I realize how big he was until that day. We drove up and there were hundreds and hundreds of people lining the streets. They were just people on rooftops, kids in trees or on parents' shoulders. Everyone was waiting to see Fred." Without having done anything regal, Patsy and Kathy had become the hometown version of Prince Charles and Lady Di. What she'll remember most was basking in the serenity of a man imbued with so much grace and kindness. "He just brought up so much peace to everything he did," she says. "As he was talking to me, he started fixing my hair. He was just so soothing. I can't think of anyone who wasn't affected by being in his presence. Oh, how I wish he was alive today, just to be there for all the children." The children? I think us adults could use him too. Imagine the pressure of being that good, that inspirational, of never falling short of the incredibly high mark the world sets for you and you've imposed on yourself. Then imagine somehow surpassing it by being scrupulous about remembering the little things so many of us so casually overlook because, well, they're just the little things. Kathy said, "Yeah, every year on July 2nd, we'd get an anniversary card with a sweet little note from Fred. Every year. You don't know how to be the guy who saves the... You don't have to be the guy who saves the world if you can at least be the guy who remembers to send a thoughtful greeting card to the folks who do. Because the little things add up. Maybe I have it all wrong. Maybe the world is full of Mr. Rogers impersonators. We pay tribute to him every time we're kind to one another." Colorful Living Tip of the Day, number 882. Put the words, "Do one really good deed," on a weekly to-do list and then make it a mission. You'll find someone who needs help and you'll be surprised by how much better you'll both feel. We build monuments to celebrate our reverence for Fred Rogers and all he means to the world. We do so in the hopes that future generations will emulate his deeds and, we hope, make the world a better place. But if Fred had any say in the matter, it's likely he'd politely refuse the honor and advise us, "Friends, if you're interested in honoring a man worthy of emulation, build a statue in honor of Jim Stumbaugh." Because without that unsung classmate, the world may never have heard of Fred Rogers. Dirk Richwine, Latrobe class of 1978, is today director of the Denver-based National Recreation and Parks Association, a nonprofit dedicated to enhancing community quality of life through foundational play. He remains a devotee of Latrobe and always includes Stumbaugh in his canon of heroes. Why Stumbaugh? Because I'm convinced without Jim Stumbaugh, the world would never have heard of Fred Rogers. Jim Stumbaugh changed Fred Rogers so Fred Rogers could change the world. It's difficult to imagine how shy and sheltered Rogers was as a boy, and how those characteristics, coupled with his perceived family wealth, led him to being tortured. And if torture seems unduly harsh, even for extreme bullying, understand that Richwine heard from Rogers' contemporaries that his family had known safe houses to which he could run for protection when the wolves began to circle. Those were his exact words, "safe houses," he says. The mother knew he was being bullied, and she had a series of homes on the way from school where he knew he could run when the bullies were after him. I don't think many people realize how difficult his childhood was. Jim Stumbaugh changed all that practically overnight. One of the most popular kids in school, Stumbaugh suffered a football injury that led to hospitalization where Fred's mother worked. She sensed he was the kind of boy who could help her troubled son. She arranged for Fred to take him and his assignments to the hopes that the popular boy would see the good in Fred. Her plan worked beyond her wildest dreams. As Fred recalled it years later, "There he was, probably the best known, smartest, most active person in our class. And he welcomed me the day after day after day. And what's more, he seemed to want to get to know me. I learned to trust him and told him some of my deepest feelings. By the time he got out of that hospital and back to school, he was telling all his friends that that Rogers kid is okay. In fact, he quietly included me in everything he thought I'd like. There's a hindsight poignancy to that humble admission that practically sheds tears. The transformation in Rogers was breathtaking. He went nearly overnight from being picked on to being popular. Rogers went on to become student council president and editor of the yearbook, largely because I had somebody who was believed in me and wasn't afraid to say so. The pair remained close throughout their lives, and when Rogers heard his old friend was battling cancer, he flew to visit Stumbaugh in his North Carolina home, even though Rogers himself was on crutches from an ankle injury. And when Stumbaugh died, one of the speakers who accepted an invitation to eulogize the unheralded former school star with a generous heart was Fred Rogers, a man who'd be eulogized by presidents and adoring souls from around the planet. Consider, Stumbaugh is not some fabled random act of kindness. He wasn't acting on an intuition that one day Fred Rogers would become famous and cite him as the reason it all came to be. He wasn't being opportunistic. He was being human. Richwine says, what Stumbaugh did was allow Fred Rogers to finally be himself. And when he showed the world he was, the whole world came to realize he was something magnificent. He's a true role model for Richwine, who says he's inspired by the hometown story at least once a week. Jim Stumbaugh is the whole cornerstone to the success of Fred Rogers. It's because of him I view it as my responsibility to help as many young people as I can. I consider it a privilege to plow the road and make the path easier for the next group of leaders. That's all because of Jim Stumbaugh and what he did for Fred and thus the world. Being Fred is unattainable to most of us. We're busy. We have tempers. We're human. It's a little more realistic to be someone's Jim Stumbaugh. And if you can't be Stumbaugh, then there is still a critical role in making the world a better place. Be Dirk Richwine. Colorful Living Tip of the Day, number 221. Never ignore even the smallest courtesy. If someone holds a door for you, look them in the eye and say an enthusiastic thank you. Let the kind person feel like they've just done you the biggest favor in the world. Maybe they'll be tempted to do you another one. In March 2023, online video streaming platform Twitch.tv, in cooperation with the Fred Rogers Company, live streamed the show's entire 31-year run without interruption. Viewers were encouraged to donate to their local PBS station throughout the marathon. The live stream was viewed more than 7.4 million times. Typical viewer reaction was like that of Kirsten Wibrick, 33, of Pittsburgh. She told reporters she started watching the marathon at 7 a.m. on Wednesday and kept the program running in the background as she worked. Listening to Mr. Rogers, she said, and his gentle message of love and acceptance is a great reminder that not everything in the world is upsetting, frustrating, or otherwise disappointing. Just the opposite, in fact. You can always find a silver lining and a reason to love. So yes, it seems America will always watch Mr. Rogers. Maybe now it's time America began to really study him. What could he teach us? How have we gotten somehow off track? How would society benefit from his example? Would civility across America improve if Mr. Rogers 101 became part of our school curriculum? If that happens, it'll happen thanks in part to two Ohio educators, one a now retired native Latrobian, the other something of a Fred Rogers apostle. They're Bob Ross Bosson and Tyler Bradshaw, two men spearheading a nascent movement to persuade the world to view Fred Rogers not as a popular children's TV host, but instead as a transcendent cultural figure along the lines of Mohandas Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr. I think, Russ Bosson says, you've reached a point where people are yearning for an authentic human being capable of being a role model for civility and all that's good. That's what Fred's been all along. I'm going to read that again. I think we've reached a point where people are yearning for an authentic human being capable of being a role model for civility and all that's good. That's what Fred's been all along. Rogers, Bradshaw says, exhibited four core behaviors that all emotionally developed adults should strive to exude. Doing so will help each of us in create what the pair calls an emotional intelligence necessary to be well-rounded and open-minded individuals. These are authenticity. Fred was wholly comfortable being who he was. He didn't waste any emotional or physical energy pretending he was something he wasn't. In every moment of every area of his life, Fred was consistent, reliable, and never duplicitous, Bradshaw says. Vulnerability. Being vulnerable leads to compassion and builds intimacy. How often in the show did Fred allow himself to be cheerfully humbled before a six-year-old know-it-all? Unlike most males of his generation, Fred shared his innermost feelings and opened up to an audience of millions on a daily basis. How rarely are we willing to open up to even one of our small circle of family and friends in a way Fred did with a nationwide audience? Civility. Try and picture Mr. Rogers in a road rage incident or smirking after posting something nasty on Facebook. It's not easy, is it? Now try and recall how you must have looked the last time you succumbed to those primal emotions and if any good came from it. Bradshaw says, Fred was always agree with everyone, but he was always civil and behaved honorably. Curiosity. Bradshaw fondly remembers episodes like the ones where Mr. Rogers went to the crayon factory. A curious mind is essential to fresh learning, expanded empathy, and the serendipitous discoveries about people, places, and things that lead to happier humans. Curiosity acts as the fuel that continues to drive our desire to be authentic, vulnerable, and civil, he says. The combination adds up to Fred Rogers and his essential message. I think people who are critical get frustrated with Fred because he succeeded with a message that was so simple and so uncluttered, but that's exactly who he was. And there will always be an element of people who believe you can't be a real leader if you're soft-spoken and preach kindness. Fred proved those people wrong. And his legacy continues to do that each and every day. Colorful Living Tip of the Day, number 952. Realize if everyone everywhere helped the people who are always helping people, then no one nowhere would ever feel helpless again. Sorry, a couple misfires. I know a secret about Fred Rogers, one I've been reluctant to share since 1993, when I was paid to share it with, about 6 million strangers. Fred Rogers did time in rehab. That was the story I wrote for National Enquirer. It was back when I was in the midst of a glorious 10-year run of wacky stories for what was then America's most notorious newspaper. I remember in vivid detail how I secured the facts. I had been sipping beers with my buddy Paul and Jimmy Plaza, owner of the Lantern, a popular Latrobe tavern that once sat on the spot that's now the senior living facility where my dear mother spent her last year. The bar phone rang. It was Val calling to say my Enquirer editor called with an assignment about St. Fred. That was his status here in Latrobe and around the world. I was instantly dismayed. I correctly surmised it would be something unflattering, which my revealing would make me a pariah to among certain elements of Latrobe's society. As you're about to learn, none of those elements were right then drinking hooch with me and Paul in the Lantern. I told Paul. Sitting and overhearing about four stools down was the late town drunk, Dickie Kemp. He died relatively young, and he was 64 in 2007, of natural causes, after many years of indulging various vices. We all liked Dickie very much. He heard the name Fred Rogers and piped right up. Fred Rogers? I was just in rehab with his son. I met Fred when he came to visit. Great guy. What's the story about? I pulled the 50 out of my wallet and told Dickie to slide on down. I'd be buying his drinks all night long. Just like that, I had my A source. I just sat and listened to tell me the story of how he was kicking one addiction while I, now all of a sudden on the expense account, was abetting another. The thrust of the story was how the scourge of drugs can happen to even the most loving of families. But the best part was how Fred, an ordained Presbyterian minister, set up an impromptu ministry right there in the rehab rec yard. When we saw him, everyone started cracking up and mocking him, Dickie said. Some of it was pretty vicious. A lot of these guys were hardcore junkies. But one by one, every one of these lowlifes went up to him and started telling him their stories. And one by one, they all began to weep. He just had so much compassion. He was saving lives. And that, I think, is the best Fred Rogers story there is. This isn't him talking to six-year-olds about what to do when the parents fight. This wasn't him explaining why the medicine stings when the doctor sprays it on a skin knee. This was Fred fixing broken adults. This was like going to the leper colony and telling the outcasts they mattered. Remember the bride describing him as Christ-like? Who's to argue otherwise? So I invite you to consider dressing like Fred for Halloween. Sure, some will mock you. Don't let that get to you. And if that's the kind of thing that tends to make you uncomfortable, then by all means, wear something else. I repeat, you don't have to dress like Fred Rogers. But it sure would be nice if you at least tried to act like him.
John Jamison, retired sheep farmer, Crabtree, Pennsylvania. My colorful living tip of the day is, learn the fine art of knowing precisely when to quit.
Thank you.
Yes.